Hello, reader. You're plugged in to another episode of PageCast, brought to you by Jonathan Ball Publishers. We hope you enjoy it.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Tessa Barlin. I'm an environmental filmmaker and photographer. And today I'm joined by Varushka Devita, who is the author of the book that we're going to be discussing today, Deep Blue, Why We Love the Sea. Varushka is a writer, author, journalist, mother, and all-round great person.
Tessa, thank you so much. I'm so excited to be chatting to you because I know you've also done some amazing things in your life and in your career. So thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I think today is going to be a really beautiful conversation because our mutual love for the ocean really, I feel that it really comes through in the way that we interact. So I'm really looking forward to it. So yeah, let's jump straight into it. It would not be a book podcast if I didn't come with some quotes that stood out from the book. So the first thing I wanted to say is that it is immediately obvious to me how deep your connection to the ocean is and how it's really shaped you as a human being. It is so inspiring, and just reading the book was so beautiful and so powerful. So I wanted to start with a quote that really meant a lot to me.
Okay.
We are land creatures, but water calls to something deeper in us, to a memory written in our bones. On my next breath, I slip beneath the surface and pull myself with breaststrokes to better feel the ocean, to release from gravity and the edges of the world soften. Sounds become muffled. There's a quiet here that doesn't exist on land. A fluid suspension that reminds me that humans were never meant to be so rigid, so fixed in place. In the sea, we are both vulnerable and free, small against the vastness, but somehow belonging to it. So I think that the first thing that surprised me actually was to hear that you are from Joburg, that you live inland.
I do.
So I wanted to ask you, what is your relationship with the ocean like, and what inspired you and what drove you to write this book?
Thank you. That is a very interesting and very relevant question. So the ocean and the sea is definitely in my blood. It's most definitely in my bones. And my connection to water is very much generational. My parents were both born on the island of Sicily. And my dad, from a very young age, started swimming in the Mediterranean Sea. I think he must have been possibly 3 years old the first time he actually entered the sea and taught himself to swim. And as I was growing up, he used to tell me stories about his own childhood and how much he loved this vast expanse of water and the saltiness, the way the sun shone on the surface of the water, the way every day it presented itself in a different way. My dad has always been very connected with the sea, to the point that when he was probably about 7 or 8 years old, him and his brother, who was older than him, and his uncle used to harvest grapes. And they used to put them in these very big baskets and transport them on a cart pulled by their mule. They loved this animal so much that after a hard day's work, they would actually take her with them onto the beach and into the waves. And they would swim with this magnificent creature who enjoyed the ocean probably as much as they did. And that just continued throughout my own childhood, these amazing stories of how he grew up. And it instilled in me a very deep love for the ocean and for the sea and for water in general. And that has actually never left me. I actually have a very vivid memory of being a child on a piece of land that is owned by my family in Sicily. And it's got these two perfectly round lakes on it. I remember them being very big, very dark, but I would swim in them. And as long as I could see my mother, I knew that I was safe. But I always imagined this enormous mythical sea creature just beneath my feet where I couldn't see. And I could actually feel it brushing against the soles of my feet and against my legs. But the thrill of it was amazing. And these volcanic lakes somehow connect with the sea. And the same way that these lakes are connected with the sea, I think we're all in some way connected with the ocean, even if we're not ocean people, because I know there's mountain people, there's sea people.
Sometimes there's both in Cape Town.
Exactly. In Cape Town, there's definitely both. But because physiologically, biologically, there's water inside of us, it connects us.
Yeah. I think that definitely there's this element of the ocean is not just the ocean, you know, it means so much more to us. It's story, it's family, it's connection. And
yes,
and for someone like you and also for me, there's this deep, deep curiosity to it as well. And I think that really comes through in your book, is this like deep desire to learn as much as you can, to speak to as many people, and also to learn about other people's stories as well and how they connect to your story. And I think that's really beautiful. And it's something that really, really comes through very powerfully.
Tessa, thank you. And the thing is, I'm still learning. There's so much more to still learn and so many more conversations to have, because everybody's connection is so personal, so universal, and so different to everybody else, which in itself is so fascinating. And the ocean, for me, is this vast world that we actually don't know enough about. There's so much more to explore and so much more to learn.
Isn't it like something like we've only mapped out like 5% of the ocean? Like I think there's that stat. I'm not sure if that's exactly it, but I know that they say we know more about the surface of the moon than we do about the deep ocean.
Yes, we know about a very small proportion of the oceans, which is actually quite beautiful because it means that there's creatures there that are actually untouched by humans, which is very special.
And I think that also another thing, as you were doing your research, doing your interviews, you spoke to so many different people with so many different backgrounds. And something that came through quite clearly was that the ocean means something different to everybody. In some ways, the ocean is a painful place because of histories of colonialism and land dispossession. I know you delved quite deeply into that. And so another thing that I got out of it was that while the ocean connects us to our humanity, it sometimes brings up a painful past.
Yes.
And a lot of the time, it's also the locus of healing, of generational healing as well. And that's something that also came through in the book quite strongly.
The ocean landscape is so complex because it means so many different things to different people. And that in itself is, I think, quite beautiful. And also the fact that it does connect us, and that there is a connection despite the challenges or the emotion or the trauma or the healing that has happened through it. The fact that that a lot of us want to actually protect it, I think is fantastic, because the ocean needs humans to protect it, to keep it alive, to keep it thriving. And where this is also very complex, things are happening. And there are amazing people in this country and globally that are doing many different things and working in many different ways so that there is some form of mutual protection that is happening. So I believe that this needs to happen bottom up and top down, because it's not a one size fits all. protection affects everybody. It affects the people who live off the ocean, where they rely on the ocean economically for their livelihood. And it also affects people who live inland, because on this planet called Earth, it's an equilibrating system. So what happens inland affects what happens in the ocean and vice versa. So we are all involved. We all play a part. And it's wonderful to see how people are actually coming together and making an effort in this regard.
That's amazing. And that actually points to another question that I have. I think you kind of answered it already, but I'd love to know, why should people care? I think that as a filmmaker, I'm always asking myself this question. Ultimately, we want our work, myself as a documentary filmmaker, you as an author, we want our work to inspire change and behavioral change. So I love to always have this conversation and ask, why should people care? Why should people care about the ocean? Someone sitting in Johannesburg, someone sitting in Mpumalanga, where they don't have access to the ocean, what would you say to those people? Why should they care? And also, how can each of us in our individual capacity get involved in ocean conservation? How can we make a difference?
So I think the first thing is to actually realize that humans are not separate from nature. I know that a lot of people believe that they are separate from nature, but we're not. We actually can't be. And one of the biggest aha moments for me was when I was chatting to a paleo-oceanographer. Her name is Robin Granger. She is from Cape Town. She does amazing work with very ancient foraminifera fossils.
You practiced that, I'm sure.
I did practice that a lot, actually. And when we were in conversation, she actually said to me that the water on the planet has been around for about 3.8 billion years. The Earth was formed about 5 billion years ago. So just to give you a bit of a perspective, and all the water on the planet is finite, which means that it gets recycled continuously. And what this means is that the water that actually flows through us, so the water that we drink and we expel and all of that, is ancient water. It's that water has been in something else. It's been in an ocean, a river, a sea, an insect, a tree, a bird, a tortoise, a dolphin. And within that discussion, it became so apparent to me that you can't disconnect from water, because water keeps us all alive. And in order for us to stay alive, we need to keep water healthy. For us to stay healthy, the planet needs to be healthy. Nature needs to be healthy. We can't live without those resources. So just understanding that, water is in me, so I need to keep it healthy. And it is my problem. I can't say, oh, you know what, like, I don't see the pollution in the sea, so it's not my problem. It is my problem. And there are so many things that I can do to lessen my footprint, lessen my impact. And it's as simple as even growing your own like seasonal lettuce or spinach or rocket, so that you actually aren't going to the supermarket and buying something that's all totally wrapped in plastic. And it's something that's growing. It hasn't been refrigerated. It hasn't been transported. And it's so good for you to eat.
And I think like you're so right about that. I haven't really thought about it until now, but I've also kind of been trying to grow some herbs. It's hard work.
It is.
And it really makes you realize how important it is to have clean water, because obviously you're needing to water your plants every day.
Yes.
The food that you're putting into your body, you know, it makes you very aware of having clean water and having clean resources.
Absolutely. And you want good water so that you can water the plants that you're growing. because you're putting that inside your body. But I have to tell you, it gets easier. So once you've actually done it for four seasons, you start to understand what you are yourself good at growing and what you enjoy eating.
Right.
And how much you actually need to grow, how much you can actually share with your neighbors. Mm-hmm. And you can then start swapping foods because we're all different. I'm really good at growing rockets and basil and parsley, for example, and lemons.
Yes. Lemons.
Yes. Whereas other people are a lot better at growing strawberries and tomatoes, for example. And we find each other and we do a swap because there really is enough for everybody.
Yeah. And it really just kind of makes you connected to the process, right? It makes you connected to nature in that way. It also makes you connected to your fellow human beings. It's a reminder, really, that we are all connected and that we depend on each other.
We do.
You know?
And it's a beautiful thing to actually depend on each other, I think.
Yeah. Anyway, let's not stray too far from the ocean. Let's get back to one of the other questions that I have, which was, so while you were doing your research, and you obviously interviewed a lot of different people, a lot of free divers, swimmers, people who really, I mean, I would call it extreme, people who swim in ice water. Mm-hmm. Sounds like it's an extreme sport in my books.
I think so too, yes.
So what did you notice about those free divers and swimmers that you interviewed? Was there anything particular that came up for you?
So Tessa, what I did, there were quite a few things that I noticed were common amongst the free divers and the extreme swimmers that I chatted to. So while the free divers were able to plumb depths of 100 meters and beyond, and these extreme swimmers are swimming in the Antarctic, and the fact that their origin stories are all so unique and different didn't stray from the fact that they had quite a lot in common. All of them are very focused. They all know how far they can actually push their bodies. And all of them have got quite an obsessive streak, which I found quite interesting. But they also know how to stay calm. What to do in a situation where the body wants to respond in a very strong and particular way, but then they know how to bring peace to their minds and their bodies because they understand themselves so well.
Mm-hmm.
So Alexei Molchanov, who is the deepest man in the world with a monofin, he's reached a depth of 133 meters. In one breath. And what he does is use a technique called the soft gaze. So because he's holding his breath, because his body actually wants him to exhale and release the carbon dioxide and then obviously inhale again, in order for him to keep calm, he does a body scan. He's like, okay, how is my body feeling? How are my shoulders feeling? Or am I relaxed? My lungs are feeling good. My legs are moving smoothly and slowly. And that brings an immense amount of peace to him without losing focus, because it's that kind of focus of you need to focus but not think about it. So it's about being in flow with what you and your body are doing. And he just knows how to do that. Mm-hmm. There's extreme swimmer Ram Barkai, who actually lives in Cape Town. He does ice swimming. And one of his things is, when you panic, don't panic. So if you find yourself in the middle of the ocean and you're looking around and you actually don't know where you are, and all these waves start to look like shark waves, and you think that there's like sharks wanting to bite your feet, his thing is, don't panic, stop, look around, figure out what you can do. And he says, sometimes the best thing to do is put your head down and keep swimming, which I think are very wise words, even just in life in general, is put your head down, keep swimming, because you will get to where you need to get to, because panic won't get you anywhere. And it's not an efficient use of your brain, your body, your oxygen. So it's better to actually just find your calm.
Yes. I think that what that really speaks to is honing in on your body and what it needs, and also just connecting to your intuition.
Definitely.
I've definitely find that you mentioned the idea of being in flow. I mean, yes. I think it's such a beautiful metaphor for being in water, because you're quite literally in flow.
Indeed.
And yeah, I mean, I think it's something that every single one of us, whether we're swimming or not, can really benefit from, is learning how to get into flow and trust your intuition. I know that from personal experience, like when I've found myself in a sticky situation, whether it's work or relationships, and I'm not sure how to deal with them, I find that the best thing to do is just put on some music, maybe not music, but I would like start dancing or just kind of moving in some way. And
yes,
that helps me just really connect with my body and my intuition. And obviously swimming is the best way to do that.
Because you do, you need to be in your body, and you need to deeply trust your body.
So true. You need to deeply trust your body.
Yes.
And that actually brings me to another question that I have, and it's for you, because I think that what also really came through was your personal experience and your personal journey of connecting with the water and how it made you very present. So I have another quote that I picked out. I'm aware of my body in the water, but not. My mind has to hold on to the awareness of my body, and it's like my mind now has the freedom to float away. A helium balloon pulling upwards. The idea of it floating into the sky, out of the atmosphere, out of sight, all thoughts and cognition far away, is surprisingly thrilling. With the mind released, there is a different awareness, more primal, more present, like there only ever was a now with no past or future. Time dissolves and becomes meaningless. And that was such a beautiful quote from you. For me, it really spoke to the idea of when you're in the water, you're just so present with yourself and your body. And it really made me wonder how's this whole experience of writing the book, of engaging with all these people, how has it helped you evolve as a person?
The journey of writing this book has helped me to evolve in so many different ways. And the part of the book that you've just read from is of me dipping in a very cold pool in Joburg because of Amber Fillery. So Amber is a phenomenal South African athlete who has broken numerous world records by swimming under ice. And me and Amber, through the journey of writing my book, had numerous marathon conversations. And every time we spoke, she was like, you've got to do it. You've got to start cold water dipping. Like, you'll love it. It's amazing. And eventually I was like, okay, Amber, I'm doing this for you. So I started cold water dipping. And the experience was amazing, because the moment that you actually let go and not worry about all the cursing that's happening in your head and the fact that you have an ice cream headache in your entire body, once you let that go and you're actually in the experience, it's quite amazing. And then something else starts to happen. There is a warm glow that starts to flow through your limbs, through your arms, down your back, and you actually start to feel warm, and a softening happens. So this for me was also very interesting. And it made me understand this fascination and addiction to cold water dipping and cold water swimming. And this is thanks to Amber Fillery and the other cold water dippers who I chatted to. So Amber finds immense peace in cold water. We're usually, well, for me anyway, the moment I get into cold water, my body tenses up. And for an instant, like I almost can't breathe. So it's that kind of, okay, like this is cold because of the contrast, right? Amber, if you find some videos of her online as she's doing her world record swims, she's in a bikini, she's wearing goggles because otherwise her eyes will actually freeze over, and she's wearing a swimming cap. I know, it's absolutely crazy. But the minute she enters the water, her body actually relaxes. There's a smile on her face. She takes a few breaths, but nothing crazy. And then she's in the water under about 25 to 30 centimeters of ice. And she gently breaststrokes to the other side. So it's so intriguing to see how water affects different people. And it's been interesting for me to have those experiences myself and learn things about myself that I didn't know. Because once you actually start pushing yourself and your body outside of your usual comfort zones, you start to realize that you're good at certain things. And that opens up a few more doors. And you push a little bit further and you realize, oh, I can actually swim 1 kilometer, 2 kilometers in the open sea. So it actually expands your world, and it has definitely expanded my world.
Amazing. Amazing. I think that I love this idea of just really pushing yourself to do this thing that's really hard, because it is really hard. I've also done it. Is
okay, you know, yes.
Force yourself to get into that freezing cold water.
Yes.
So cold it burns.
It does.
But there's this idea of pushing yourself to do this thing, expand your world.
Yes.
I wonder if you've also had an experience of it having a positive effect on your mental health, or if you can maybe speak about how cold water immersions and water really benefits mental health.
So that is a very big question. And I think different people have different opinions. My opinion is that cold water is really good for the body and the mind, but seawater is amazing for your health as well. It contains sodium chloride, which is salt. There is sulfate, potassium, magnesium, so many other beneficial things in the water that help your skin. You're floating, so there's no gravity pulling you down, and that just has a wonderful sensation on the body and the mind. But for me personally, even if I'm walking on the beach and I'm just looking at the water, it totally calms and slows down my thoughts. And it makes me realize that the world is vast. The ocean is vast. Life carries on. There is so much beauty in the world, and that I'm okay. And that is such a good feeling. And I know that for many other people who I've had conversations with and who I chat to, they tell me they actually can't live without the sea in their daily life, whether it's a dip, a swim, just putting their feet in the water. It's a ritual that makes them feel good and makes them feel better. Do I think everybody benefits from a mental health point of view? I don't know. We're all different. So I like to think so.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. So I'd also really like to think so. Mm-hmm. I know that it's really helped me personally as well.
Me too.
Yeah. Mm. What advice do you have to someone who is, okay, so I suppose there's different types of people. There's those who don't have access to the ocean in their immediate lives. There are those who maybe do have access to the ocean, but don't, they haven't really thought, I mean, they're the type of people who say cold water's not for me.
Yes.
Do you have any advice for people who are listening to this podcast thinking, okay, maybe I should just push myself a little bit, whether it's to, you know, get into the cold water or somehow incorporate cold water immersions into my daily practice? Do you have any advice for those kind of people?
Yes. So I think start by finding other people or groups who do this. I know it can be a little bit scary, but go on to the beach early in the morning. There's usually a group or a few groups that meet up and they'll swim a little bit. Some are faster, some are slower, and actually just start approaching people, chat to people. People are generally quite open and quite friendly. And just watch how it's done. It's not as scary as it seems. And you don't have to be dipping for 30 minutes in your first go. Get into your costume, go see, sit in the water for a minute or two and then get out. And then go a few days later, sit for 5 minutes. Chat to some people, maybe decide to meet up with them the next day. And start like that. Do it slowly. There's no rush. And for people who want to maybe swim in cold water, do the same. Find a group. If you live inland, I know in Gauteng, there's a dam called Viewpoint Dam in Midrand, which is where I swim and where a lot of people who are training for Midmar actually go and swim. And it's great. And it's cold, also in the middle of Joburg summer. So you get that cold water, like fresh, frisky feeling, which is fantastic. And the more you do it, the more you actually start to enjoy it, the more your body starts to love it. I know that that's what's happened with me. At first, it was like, oh, this contrast between like warm air and this very cold water is very uncomfortable. But the more I did it, the more my body started anticipating this freshness and almost relief of cold. And it starts to feel really good. Your body appreciates it. And keep doing it. Keep going. Do it for a month. Do it for 2 months. Do it for a season. And just see where it takes you. I promise you'll make new friends. if nothing else, you'll meet new people.
Yes, so true. So true. I think it's that inclusivity and that community aspect around it. And I'm glad you mentioned for people who do live in Joburg, because
yes.
I was going to say there might be some people saying, okay, well, it's all very well if you live by the sea, but I don't. So I'm glad you spoke about that. I'd love to know, coming back to your personal experience of writing the book, what was your biggest challenge? Did you have any challenges with writing this book?
I have to say, everyone who I spoke to was amazing. So there were no challenges. Everyone was so generous. Everyone was, oh, you need to speak to this one. Oh, you must speak to that one. Oh, you need to find out about that. And it was so beautiful how that my interactions allowed the story to unfold. Because I started with a few people in mind and I chatted to them. And then they actually suggested the other people that I should chat to. And it all formed this beautiful constellation of people. And that for me was amazing. So no, there weren't any challenges. I think the only thing that I sometimes didn't realize is that while I was writing, I was in deep, deep, beautiful flow. And I actually forgot to stand up and have a few stretches. So there were days that it would be like 5 o'clock and I'd be like, oh dear, like I haven't eaten, my feet are swollen.
You haven't done your steps.
Like I haven't done my steps. Like I need to go, I need to go to the pool and train before the gym closes. So it was more actually like those practical things that I had to make sure happened in my writing days. I'd say those were my challenges, and they weren't even big ones, I have to be honest.
I mean, may we all have such challenges in our lives.
You're right.
Forgetting, you're in such deep flow, you forget to do your steps. And I think that it honestly, I can honestly say that it comes through in the book. I mean, it was such an easy read. Like when I was reading it, I got into my flow. And I think that it's because of your writing. It was so eloquent and beautiful, and you, the way you build worlds is so captivating that I think that it's just such a beautiful, easy read that helps anyone get into their flow. So yeah, thank you so much. And I think my last question would be then, now that the book is done,
yes,
how do you feel?
It's amazing. It still feels quite surreal. The book is now taking me on this amazing journey of meeting more fascinating people. And it's also given me an even deeper respect for the ocean and the sea. I didn't think it was possible, but I actually love the sea even more now.
So you'll be moving down here soon?
I think so, yes.
Okay.
As soon as the children have finished school.
Well, I mean, I can just say that I would love to join your swimming club. So
fantastic.
I'll be waiting for you in Cape Town.
I'm looking forward to that, Tessa. Thank you.
Thanks, Varushka. Thank you so much for today and for this conversation and for your book. I'm so inspired. Every time I picked it up, I was like, I need to go to the ocean right now.
It was my pleasure. Thank you, Tessa.
Thank you for listening to this episode of PageCast, brought to you by Jonathan Ball Publishers. Did you love what you heard? Don't just stop at the stories. Buy the books. Visit your favorite bookstore to grab your next read. And remember to subscribe, share, and join us again next week for more fascinating conversations. Until then, happy reading.